Collaborative businesses are on the rise, and this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, a podcast that will help you find answers and provides useful insights to the best ways of working together in partnerships, alliances, and many other kind of business-to-business collaboration. Here's your host, Peter Simoons.
Welcome to the episode 7 of the Collaborative Business Podcast. My name is Peter Simoons, and I'm your host. And in this episode, I'm in conversation with Snehal Desai, who is the Global Business Director of Dow Water and Process Solutions. In this episode, you will hear Sneh explain the widespread of types of collaborations that Dow has. We discuss the role and the benefit of ASAP, the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals, where Sneh was one of the founding members. And later on in the conversation, you will hear Sneh explain the role of alliance management and executive sponsors. What I found fascinating here is the way Sneh describes it, not from a theory perspective that we understand the need of executive sponsors. No, Sneh describes it from the perspective of an executive sponsor, as he is one himself, and he describes why the role is essential in alliances. As usual, links to the material discussed in this episode will be in the show notes, and you can find them at simoons.com/episode7. Now let's welcome Snehal Desai into the conversation. Hi, Sneh. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good, it's actually morning here in, in the U.S., but it's a good day nonetheless.
Well, that's good. Welcome to the podcast, and it's already a nice opening to see how widespread alliance people are around the world. I'm in Amsterdam, and you are in the U.S. At the moment.
Yep.
So different time zones. Mm-hmm. Before we really dive into the conversation, can you clarify, explain a little bit who you are and what do you do?
Sure. So my name is Snehal Desai, and I am the Global Business Director for Dow Water and Process Solutions, which is a division within the Dow Chemical Company. My responsibility actually is to the general manager for the business. I have responsibility for approximately 1,900 employees and a business that's really focused on separation and purification technologies, mostly applied to the water industry, but we also utilize those same technologies in a variety of different marketplaces. But it's something that is on the rise, as you can imagine, so a great market and a great business to be in. And I've been in the chemicals and plastics industry for over 25 years, the bulk of that being in Dow Chemical, but I did spend some time outside of the company working in a joint venture and then also in a venture-backed startup company. So a little bit of diversity in the background as well. Okay. And I'm based in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Minneapolis, Minnesota. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's also to make the global map complete then, so where I am and where you are.
Exactly.
So there is one thing that comes to mind during your introduction, it's not in our list of questions, but I'll post the question anyhow.
Sure.
Somehow, Dow Chemical, so the chemical part of your company name, contradicts for me with water.
Hmm.
So
yeah.
Can you help me out here?
Well, I think, you know, so if you think about the water industry, it's multifaceted. And in fact, you know, there are a number of chemicals, if you will, that are used in the treatment of water. But, you know, when you think about Dow, you should think about it more broadly in terms of material science. And from there is where our particular product lines really stem, and that's around the topic of reverse osmosis technology that's used to desalinate water, or ion exchange resins that are actually used to purify them even further for the purposes of high quality applications. Those are fundamentally driven by polymer science because you make the products and very advanced products utilizing the types of knowledge within a company like Dow. And so over the years, we've developed competencies, but actually along the way, we acquired some of those competencies as well. So we have a market-leading position in the market for making reverse osmosis elements, which you know, are typically the technology of choice when it comes to filtering water and getting this to a quality where we can use it for either drinking or for industry. But that's taken, you know, probably three decades to get it to the point where we see it being adopted widely around the world. So it's, you know, when you think of Dow, you can think about chemicals, but you think about the vast competency base. And quite honestly, it's the derivatives that you make from various feedstocks, whether they be, you know, petroleum-based or renewable-based. But it's what you make from those products that end up being what power most of the economy, right? So for us, this is not about the chemical side of it, but creating devices that actually cause filtration to occur.
Okay.
Hopefully that makes sense.
That makes sense, absolutely. And what I didn't tell you, there is another perception for me when it comes to Dow, mm-hmm. and that really goes back 30 years. In my first job, I was reselling Dow insulation products, so the blue insulation foam.
Sure.
So that's another side of the business, I assume.
Well, and so, yeah, and I, you know, this probably plays pretty well into the whole idea of partnerships and collaboration, but more importantly, how a company that has core technology has to look at various opportunities to extend that technology. And most of the time, you can't do all of that yourself. So that's where partnership comes in. But specifically, that product that you were selling back 30 years ago, which was an insulation material, the raw material for that, that same raw material, we take and modify and turn it into ion exchange beads that do water treatment. So for a company that actually, you know, takes these basic molecules and then further refines them and modifies them to create functionality, you know, they're actually related, if you will, from a lineage point of view, but they do completely different things. And for any company to be able to operate in very different, you know, very different markets like that, it's become increasingly difficult for one to do it all by themselves, because that takes a huge amount of knowledge and specialization. And so that's where partnerships, while they weren't as prevalent maybe back 30 years ago, I mean, the increasing need for that is what we see, because you just can't solve all the problems and have all the knowledge in one place. So that's just to give you kind of maybe a tie-in that there is some connection when they all said
and yeah. And it's also a very nice bridge to my next question. So when you look at business partnerships, collaborations, alliances, what are they for you and for your business?
Well, it's exactly what I was describing. You know, most of the time we're talking about platform technologies when we as Dow look at markets, particularly new markets, and whether it's an adjacency for you know, the use of something that we currently produce, but in a different way, or if it's looking at just extending our presence in the market by bringing in other technologies that we don't currently have. You know, the days of developing those capabilities, whether it's channel or technology, doing all that in-house has really become prohibitive, just from a time perspective. It's just too difficult to do. So for business collaboration and the way we look at it and the way I look at it is really an opportunity to bring complementary capabilities to bear in a quicker fashion so that we can take advantage of market opportunities because time is money. And in many cases, it's not just about the time. It's the idea that there is truly something that another firm can do and knows that we will never know. So that's the way we look at it, and it's really to drive growth, whether it's research agreements, which is the way we typically look at things on a partnership basis in a growth business, you know, joint development agreements and the like, all the way through to channel and channel alliances where we're maybe go to market with another company with a complementary technology to bring more of a full solution to our respective customer bases. So It's pretty vast, and I think that's one of the things that, as I look at the alliance space, you know, some industries have a very well-defined role for people called strategic alliance managers. In DAO, there is no such thing. There is not a group that strictly focuses on alliances because they take very many different forms. I just mentioned, research alliance, supply chain alliances. As DAO as a corporation, we've outsourced our IT, but it's not more just, it's more than outsourcing. It's really, it's been kind of a blending of employees and competencies, et cetera, all the way through to go to market. And we are pretty big on joint ventures to help us get into new geographies. So the flavors are so different. The purposes are so different. A centralized group hasn't really been created because it isn't necessarily a constant job. It becomes part of many people's jobs. And with that, we haven't necessarily, I would say, driven along the path of best practices such that we're training people in the classic sense. But the concept of partnership and collaboration actually sits pretty firmly at the base of most of what I see going on in the company as we look to grow. So it's pretty multifaceted, and it's definitely something that finds, the concept of alliances and collaboration finds itself across the board. It comes up everywhere, everywhere in the world too.
Interesting. And is there a way, I looked into your LinkedIn profile this morning and I realized again when I read it that you were one of the founding members of ASAP a long time ago.
Yeah.
You've probably seen developments in ASAP. You've seen developments in your own company. You've seen that learning and sharing best practices is important. How do you see that over those, 14, 15 years of ASAP and the development in your own company?
Well, I'd say first taking it from the ASAP perspective, it's a pretty interesting journey because the concept of collaboration and even alliances wasn't necessarily new at the time. However, if you think about the time frame of the late 90s, there was quite a bit going on in there were two things that we saw going on that I think drove the need for more focus and getting more out of groups that were focused on partnerships and collaboration. One was what we saw going on in the IT space, particularly with, if you want to call it Web 1.0. But there was so much going on there with regards to new technologies, small companies partnering with big companies, big companies partnering with big companies, that the idea of being able to have a productive relationship and maybe following some rules of the road or best practices to help you get to a more productive outcome, I think that gave some impetus for people to want to go out and learn how to build partnerships and have them sustain. I think at the same time, we saw some transitions going on, and it had been going on, I think, for a while, transitions going on in the biopharma industry, where the traditional pharma companies had decided they weren't going to do everything themselves and really focus on pipeline filling with relationships. So that at that period of time, that was a newer concept, but some forward-thinking companies were thinking about how to not only learn from folks in their industry, but also maybe leveraging learnings from across industry. And that's where the Association for Strategic Alliance Professionals really was born, from that idea that there were enough companies that were not only interested in utilizing alliances as a method for managing their business and growing their business, but they were recognizing that some of those core approaches, transcended their particular need and interest. They could learn from others. And I happened to be in, I was actually in a role within DAO where we had a new technology platform. We were looking to try to get into new businesses, and that became more of a personal interest of mine to learn more. And through learning more, I came across some of the people at the time that were part of the formation of this group. And so they pulled a few of us together. And, from those early days, it's really transitioned. It's definitely transitioned. More companies, more people around the world, not just talking about partnerships, but thinking about it in a more structured way. I think we see that through the growth of the association. I mean, we're well over 2,000 members, but it's really the companies and global firms that you see at the table that you could see that they really developed a capability that's much more robust. But I, like I said, there were certain industries where it became the way to do business, and so you had to pick up the ball. Pharma is one. I think high tech is definitely another. When you look at an industry like what we operate in with Dow, it's actually probably picked up more so in the last 5 to 7 years. And part of that is like I said, you can't build all the capability yourself. And as you see the economy go through what it's gone through, maybe in 08, 09, and capital being tighter and just struggling to find areas of growth, you become more creative, and creativity really lends itself to say, okay, how do I look around and find others that are trying to do some of the same things I'm doing? So within Dow, like I said, I've been involved in this for over 15 years. And while the concept of partnerships and collaborations has always been there, and I would say wasn't necessarily new, the idea of approaching it in a structured way and then maybe thinking about it as a more distinct pillar of how you grow beyond buying and building your own, I've seen that accelerate in the last several years. And it's because of the quicker pace in the market, maybe some more constraints on capital to be able to build your own, but fundamentally not having all of the competencies that one needs to be able to achieve the objectives that we have. So, you know, it's a little bit like, it's pretty funny because it's older thinking, but it's not lost. If you probably know the book by Jeffrey Moore, Crossing the Chasm, but the whole concept of this is more for technology companies that were developing very discrete products, but what I think they had a concept in that about the whole product, and that's that no matter what you sell and do, you're really typically just part of something that might be slightly bigger than what you can bring to the table. And, you know, partnerships are a great way for assembling more of a full solution without you as a company that maybe excels in one particular part of that solution, trying to do the other parts that you don't. And I think that's a concept, at least here in Dow, and particularly in the business that I'm running, that we're embracing more and more, that, you know, our thing, whatever that thing may be, is definitely a critical part of a solution, but it's not always the entirety. And so we have to find ways to work with people that have the other pieces of the solution and sort of virtually partner to ensure that the marketplace gets the best of what they can. So it's evolved for sure. But I think there's more people that are definitely knowledgeable about the concepts around alliances.
Mm-hmm.
They may not even call it that, but they do go through your typical, you know, strategy process, your partner selection criteria, your thinking about governance. I mean, a lot of the things that we've learned over the years about what can make an alliance successful, you see more companies practicing that. Even if they don't, like, even if they're like Dow, where we don't have a formal group, there's more of that embedded in the way people are doing business that I've come across, at least.
Yeah. I agree, but the way you express alliances, collaborations, the way you express how you are part of something bigger than you can do by yourself is a very clear way of collaborative thinking. And even though more and more companies are getting in that direction, I feel that many companies still are hesitant to really collaborate and do something together with others. When you talk about alliances or partnerships, you get sometimes vague looks where people say, well, we have to give up control. We don't like that.
Yeah.
Do you recognize that when you talk to partners?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's something that is a constant challenge because there is I won't say that this is necessarily the thought domain for just big companies, because you see that with small companies as well, but there is this feeling that I'd rather have 100% of the gain. And that even, what I found is that the worst case isn't so much at the beginning of a relationship, it's somewhat along the path of having the relationship, that one of the parties thinks they understand what the other person does, and they get the notion in their head that they can do it, And that's when it, to me, that's where I've seen some of the even really good relationships start to fray, because then people kind of look at it and say, well, why am I sharing the gains with this company when I look at what they're doing? I could do that too. And it's a constant battle to make sure that you really understand what it is that you're bringing to a relationship. And it kind of goes back to the context of core competencies. You know, could I go out and develop a complementary technology to go with my product? Sure, I could. I have 5,000 researchers in the company and about a $1.6 billion R&D spend. Pretty sure we could do that. But should I do it is the question. And that's always going to be the struggle that we see, that I've seen. And not just in thinking about getting into a relationship, but as I said, the worst case is actually when you get into a relationship and it's working, yet somebody, and I say somebody meaning some of the parties, you know, whether it's the management structure, the executive sponsors, or oftentimes it's other functions or other parts of your company that maybe is tasked with thinking about doing some of the same things that you've engaged a partner to do, that they start getting thoughts about how they could participate in that, and it gets a little bit more tricky. But that's where you have to be very sure, and you need strong executive sponsorship, and you definitely need a strong understanding of what you're good at and what you're not good at, to make sure you don't slide down that slope, because it happens. It happens very quickly. And like I said, with big companies that have vast resources, that's always the case. I mean, they naturally think, oh, I could do that. And it's probably true. They could do that, but could they do it as well? Could they do it as fast? And do you expect that you're going to continue to refine that competency such that it's always going to be bringing the best that it can? Or are you just going to go off to the side and start building your own, and you're already behind the curve regardless? Because it's not what you do everywhere. It's just the one thing you've decided to do to support this one relationship. So it's tough stuff.
Yeah, indeed. And when you then look at the learning aspect of alliances, so is there a typical alliance that you've been involved in that taught you the most about how not or how to do alliances or how not to do alliances?
Well, I've been a part of several, but you know, and I think probably the place where I learned the most was when I was actually working within an alliance. So, back in the early 2000s, really between 2003 and 2008, this is actually the time that I left Dow, but I went to work in a joint venture between Dow and Cargill. And it was focused on bringing a new bio-based material, plastic, to market. And what was interesting is that the premise of the relationship between the two companies was really sound, right? So you have Cargill, which is fundamental in renewable feedstocks, biotechnology, that had done some initial work around developing this, you know, a more sustainable, you know, material. And but it was really a chemical manufacturing process at the end of the day, along with of how to market and sell plastic resins, and that was the clear competence of Dow. So I think the relationship as it started made a whole lot of sense, and so they formed a joint venture. I had an opportunity to work in that, and you know, lots of learnings there. But one of the things that I learned having lived in that alliance is that, you know, on paper, what I just described to you around competencies, you know, biotechnology, manufacturing, marketing and sales, on paper, that looks really good when you're sitting down at the table to negotiate the deal. Uh-huh. But when you get into the practical use of those and actually get into the actual project, it's, as they say, you know, those competencies either A, may reside in the company, but they reside in one person or two people. And oh, by the way, those people have a job already. So they're not just completely standing there available to you in the venture to be able to help deploy that against your particular project. And the second thing is that you know, oftentimes I've thought is like, you know, you either commit and focus on the health and well-being of the venture, or you've created it somewhat in a way. And this is to your, I think, to your earlier question, when companies think that, you know, it's tough for them, they think they could control it all, do it all. Sometimes people form joint ventures with the notion of saying, yeah, I can't do it. I'm just going to put it over there with that, you know, in its own separate thing, and you know, hopefully it'll work. And it doesn't really have the same commitment of bringing in the right capabilities, resources, opening the doors, et cetera. Now, I'm not saying that exactly was the case in the venture I was working in, but we had some of that kind of behavior, where if we needed to tackle an issue around an engineering problem, those engineers from either Dow or Cargill, they could show up and they would help you. But, you know, like I said, they're more hired guns. They come in, they talk to you, and then they go away. So over time, we had to build our own competencies within the venture. And it sort of defeated the part of the purpose of why you got together in the first place, because you were going out. We were hiring people from industry, not necessarily just bringing them in from each of the parent companies. And so you kind of got to the point of saying, well, what is it that these two companies are doing together? And it always tried to revolve back to that initial premise of each company's competencies. But what you found in the long run, at least what I found in the long run, is that we had to go out and secure our own, because the venture or any partnership has its own characteristic, has its own framework, has its own strategies, has its own objectives. And if you really want to accelerate that, you find I thought it was very challenging to try to accelerate growth of our venture by relying on tapping into the resources from the parent companies, because, like I said, most resources in big companies or any company are already consumed and aligned to some other activity.
Yeah, they're already for a reason.
Yeah, we don't have just people waiting to do something, you know, that's hanging out. and so it was really tricky, because you could, you know, if either of the parent companies was busy with some other big project, I mean, good luck. You not only were being asked to wait because of prioritization, but because you aren't even within the infrastructure of either of those two companies, your place in the queue could actually be not even known, right? It's not like you're standing in line. You're actually at home waiting for somebody to call you to stand in line. And it just became such that we had to go off and do our own thing. And I think I've seen that in a couple of other of our collaborations on the research side. You know, we do a lot of joint development agreements to develop technology with partners in the marketplace, maybe downstream of us, that are looking to deploy a certain solution in a certain, you know, let's say in the power industry or the semiconductor industry or something. And we get into a relationship with those companies, and we say, okay, well, we're going to bring this kind of capability, you're going to bring that kind of capability. But inevitably, when you get into the doing of the project between the two, those very capabilities are really, they're people, and those people end up having other projects. And that's continues to be a dilemma, to ensure that the partnership, that you, what you commit to do, making sure that you have the ability to control and direct those resources to deliver on your end of the bargain. Yeah. To me, that's become one of the biggest challenges for partnerships and collaboration, is that most companies are running lean. So they oftentimes take some of those individuals, and they cannot afford to necessarily dedicate them to the particular relationship. And when they're not dedicated to that, then you're always constantly running into the conflict of, how do I make sure that my project is getting what it needs and our relationship is progressing at the pace that we wanted? You can't control your partner's resource prioritization, right? If I did it all myself, then I could maybe make that case. I just can't do that with them.
No, and I would say that's where the role of an alliance manager comes in, to mm-hmm. not necessarily control it, but try to work it as a diplomat, as a relationship manager, to see how he or she can manage the priorities.
Yeah.
You have those assigned in your alliances?
We do, but I would tell you, one of the things that we're challenged with is that we don't, many of our programs are what I would call of the small and medium variety. And what I mean by that is that they are a relatively discrete program related to a particular go-to-market strategy for a particular product in a particular geography, or it's a development program that is, you know, again, very discrete. So what that lends itself to is not necessarily having people that are just purely alliance managers, but you're taking an individual that might be an R&D manager or they might be a marketing manager, and their dual role is to not only do the work, right, or manage the work of the project, but then they are also responsible to the relationship with the other party. And oftentimes that person, you know, just from a hierarchical perspective, they don't have the stroke to be able to get the kind of audiences that they need and to be able to drive the kind of mutual prioritization of resources. Now, we employ some pretty typical approaches by having, you know, executive sponsors and having steering teams and the like. But as you know, Peter, a lot of this happens in the day-to-day of making sure things are going to happen or not happen. And just positionally, we get challenged because not only on our side of the table, it's the individual that's assigned to work the relationship from the other party. Oftentimes, you're further down in the organization, and so it's tougher for them to influence one and two levels above them. And so we do try to at least assess the nature of the relationship such that if it's big enough and even on the medium-sized deals, you know, oftentimes I'll get involved or one of my business leaders will get involved to ensure that we actually kind of keep things on track. We have a really good, as an example right now, we have a really good relationship with a filtration company based out of Europe, and you know, we're taking their technology and evaluating it for an opportunity to take it to market through our channels. But we also bring some technology development. But anyway, the structure of that relationship is great is because the business unit manager, the SVP for that division, and myself, you know, are in contact once a quarter to ensure that we both know what's going on. And we don't convene the whole group. We just call it, you know, we talk to each other. And that provides the air cover and the alignment between the two organizations, even though a lot of the day-to-day work, you know, does run into challenges, but they, at a minimum, we know we're going to be addressing it on a quarterly basis and not letting it just kind of flounder if things aren't going in the path that they need to. So, and I've seen that really as being a real good best practice, is having a very strong steering team with people that are organizationally positioned to help unblock and the concept of bringing capabilities, because that's mostly what we're talking about in these partnerships anyway, is to make sure that they are resource owners or people that have an ability to bring to bear what was promised, and then having a pretty strong executive sponsor to break through any other gaps, you know, that might even be insurmountable by your steering team.
It's great how you describe the role of an executive sponsor. Thank you. Well, because indeed we often see those multi-layers. So we have the alliance manager, we have a steering committee, and then we have the executive sponsor who is sometimes part of the steering committee. But it's great to hear how you, from an experience perspective, describe the role of and not only describe the role, but also the need for the role of an executive sponsor.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in it. And I think the biggest challenge you end up having is that the longer your relationship, the chances of having those same individuals in those different level roles are, it's highly unlikely that you're going to have all the same people there, right?
Yeah.
Executive sponsors can rotate pretty quickly depending on the nature of that individual's mobility within an organization or just the nature of things anyway, right, of change. And the same goes for your steering team. And so one of the other things that I've found to be pretty important is you kind of have to retest the premise of why you got into the partnership. You know, both parties need to, but definitely if I'm looking at a relationship, on any of the programs that we've started, and let's say we're into year two of it, you still have to go back and validate the basic business case of why we're doing what we're doing. Because it's too easy to get yourself stuck in a paradigm where the reason you're doing something is because of the personal beliefs of the individuals that started it. And I don't mean that says it's an ungrounded business case, but it is more personal drive and motivation, right, around, let's just say that you have one executive sponsor that believes, or steering team person, that believes in the opportunity, but they also have a fundamental belief in the way that one goes about activating that is through a partnership, as opposed to doing it by themselves. I think to your question earlier on, right, about how oftentimes you'll find those that think that maybe they could do it all themselves. Well, you can change executive sponsors or change people on the steering team in pretty critical roles that have a very different philosophy or a belief of how one should go about getting after the business opportunity. And that's where a fracture could occur. Let's say in my counterpart at this other company that mentioned, if he changed roles, because he's a believer that there's something that Dow can help him do that he can't necessarily do himself. But if he were to change roles and another person came in and that guy says, you know what, I think we can do this. I mean, that's the danger, because that's where the fracture can occur. It's not at the working level where something, you know, conflict or this and that. That doesn't necessarily end up being the reason why some of these things fail. I think it's just a fundamental divergence of not only on the business case and the opportunity, but then also the belief that partnership is the way to get there.
Yeah, and I've seen that happen indeed.
It's something that is a constant, that's a constant vigilance that is a challenge for a strategic alliance manager. If you're on the front lines, if you will, that's a challenge for them to manage, because that's actually asking you to get in the head of people that may be one or two or 10 pay grades above you. It's just tough, right? But I think if you formally, as an alliance manager or head of an alliances program or someone in a role that can actually at least convene that kind of discussion, I think it's critical to make sure that you go back and validate, not a lot, but validate often enough so that you look for any potential fractures in people's conviction, A, about the opportunity, and B, around the method that you're using to get there. Because if that's there, better to try to address it early on, particularly if you believe it's still the right path. You know, make sure that people are still on board, because that can derail a great program.
Yeah.
Because in fact, the better it looks and you get a person that changes their mind about collaboration being the path to get there, the chances of someone then deciding, well, you know what, why don't we just go off and do this on our own? I think it's not when the things aren't going well, it's when the things might actually be going well. They think, well, I'd like to have more of the pie then. Looks pretty easy.
Yeah, then it looks easy, but they will find out when they get there if it's easy or not. And probably
exactly.
It's not easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would be your number one recommendation for organizations entering into a partnership or an alliance?
It's exactly what I was just saying. You have to know why, right? I think that's the thing, because it's too sexy to say, we're going to have a partnership with XYZ. But you have to be really crystal clear, and it's sort of the old adage of asking five whys, right? But you just have to know why a partnership or a collaboration is the right way to go about pursuing whatever the opportunity is. And express it completely. It has to be an explicit description. It cannot be buried in the heads of people, and you can't use light terms. You know, a lot of the discussion I have with my team, and I've just had the good fortune over the course of the last 15 years of kind of being in roles where alliance thinking was part of how I felt business needed to be done, and I had the latitude to do it. And then as I've progressed over the years, I now am in a position where, you know, I'm leading a business unit, and I can use that as the framework of how I would like to see us as a business go about growing. But one of the things that I find still, and I say this about my own organization, you know, we get so fixated on the company that we want to partner with that they sometimes don't spend the time talking about the specific business case, and more importantly, the criteria that we see as critical to having a good partner. So oftentimes I'll tell folks, as I said, great, I appreciate the fact that you have this really great idea and this is the right company to do it with. I said, but before we go do anything, I'd like you to take two steps back, you know, really go back and ground your business case, take the other company out of it, and just talk to me about what the business case is, and then talk to me about what the ideal partner is. And then we can talk about whether these guys are the right ones. But it's so people are so quick to want to jump to the deal. Yeah. That step to me ends up being one of the, sometimes can be a missed step. And if you miss it, then you find yourselves cranking away on agreements, sometimes running into problems because you really didn't vet out what's important to you. But more fundamentally, you just may have missed the boat on whether or not you should have partnered to begin with or if there was a better guy to do it with. I just think it's, so the knowing the why, to me, is probably the biggest, and you then get into all of these other aspects of it.
But it starts with why.
It starts with why. It starts with nine, not the what. Because I think I see a lot of people get into the what. Let's do that deal. But why do I want to do that deal? And why do I want to do it with them? And why don't I do it myself? I mean, those are the kind of whys that you can get at, and make it explicit to everybody on why you're choosing. You know, I've done this recently. Why am I choosing not to manufacture a certain product and going to another party to help me do that? Why? It's too easy for people to say, well, yeah, I can do that. I said, yeah, but why am I saying I won't do it? And then when you go through that conversation, you open up those debate points that you can find internally, for sure. And sometimes you can flesh out the guys that are going to maybe be a problem for you down the road anyway, you know, when it comes to actually doing the execution of what you thought was the right idea.
Yeah, but with a clear answer to why and a clear answer to your strategic rationale, you will have a solid foundation for a partnership going forward.
Absolutely.
Or for the direction chosen going forward,
yep.
Whether it's a partnership or another direction.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a business book or a book about alliances that you would like to recommend to our listener?
You know, I don't have one. I don't have one today. So it's kind of funny. I don't read as much around business books anymore. And I'm not saying that there isn't stuff to be read, but to be quite frank, I find most of my best reading through social media, and it's rarely books in full form. it's articles that people are writing in blogs, through real experienced practitioners, if you will, that are sharing what's real and what's happening and not necessarily spending the time to collapse it all into a big book.
Okay,
so,
let's rephrase the question then.
Yeah.
Is there a site where you spend most of your time reading about alliances and get good learnings for yourself?
Well, yeah, I think one of them, and this is not pandering to my host, but I do appreciate your newsletters. I think that they bring examples that are real, but then I also like sort of you do take a twist on certain topics, whether it's your trek that you had there in Spain or some of the places that you're visiting in the world. It's not so focused on just alliances, but bringing it into the context of what might be happening in that particular area or in that particular time in history. That's I think that's just it's a little bit like how do I describe it? It's a little bit like historical fiction to me, which is a genre of book that I like to read, which is if I were to sit down and read a history book, okay, those are facts. It's interesting. But when you put it into the context of a story or something that's a little bit more interesting, you know, it does bring your awareness level up because you've entertained along the path of delivering some type of learning, right? And I use that maybe as a loose analogy that some of the best stories I'm seeing, because I read quite a bit around sustainability, around, you know, clean tech and water. and partnerships. I mean, those are probably the three or four things that I have in my Flipboard app that I've, you know, found people that I follow on Twitter. That's the kind of stuff that I do. And what's really most interesting is when they start to converge. For me, that's where innovation happens anyway, but that's the kind of thing I look for. So whether it's reading Joel McCower and GreenBiz about some of the cool stuff going out there in sustainability, when you dig down into it, what you see is that there are lots of partnerships happening to enable these great things. And so I'm looking at it not so much around the subject of collaboration and partnership, so much as I'm looking at new opportunities and where things are happening and how is partnership actually maybe starting to help make some of these real. So it's looking at it from both directions, right? I read, but it's short stuff, and it's not because I have short attention span. I think that's just the way that the world is right now. Is reading just what you need when you need it. It's a little bit like the Khan Academy approach to learning. You
know, yeah.
What you need when you need it, but I also love the idea of just coming upon stuff that others find interesting, and if I find them interesting, I really appreciate that endorsed passing along of information. So,
okay, well, I think that's a great recommendation. I recognize the way of reading, by the way. I it's the same for me. I try to read books, but I often am catching myself noticing that I am 3-4 chapters into a book and I'm already reading a next book.
Right. I mean, it's just amazing, right? I mean, you think about it, chapters is probably as good as I get. And I'm not saying, again, that I don't read books, but I just find myself that if I pick up a business book, this is probably to the failing of the industry, but you pick up a business book because of the core concept that they want to talk to you about, but then somewhere along the way, they felt they had to fill up another 100 pages.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's rehashing stuff that you've already read, et cetera. So to me, that's kind of the cool stuff. And because of my marketing background, I also have a pretty keen interest in just the evolution of social media and how it's changing the way we as business marketers have to think about engaging people. So I belong to a professional organization called the CMO Club, which is the Chief Marketing Officers Club. And actually, I'm not one of the founders there, but it's got a similar vein to how ASAP started. It's professionals getting together, mostly at senior level, to really talk about what's changing. And it's fascinating to listen to people from very different industries talking about how important that media is. And you know, when you think about partnerships and relationships, and you think about the network and the internet, and there is a lot of it does come off of that. Evolution of technology and what's going on. So.
Well, great conversation, Snee. Where can our listener find more about you and your business? You already mentioned social media, and I know you're on Twitter, but where can they find you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter, as you mentioned. It's Snee Desai is my handle. But also for my business, it's Dow Water and Process. .com or at Dow Chemical, but those are a couple places that you can find me, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity for further exchange and dialogue. If people are interested, they can find me. I think Twitter's probably by far one of the easiest ways to do that.
Yeah. All right. I will include the handles in the show notes, so that's easy for people to look up.
Great.
So anything we haven't discussed that you feel that you want to share with our listeners?
I don't think so. I mean, I just appreciate the opportunity to chat with you about what I see going on in the world of collaboration. I think it's increasingly important. And I can tell you that in the area of sustainable development and what we see is tackling the biggest problems we have, not the business problems, but the big problems. This collaboration gene is so fundamentally important to being able to really make the breakthroughs that we need. So I just encourage anybody that listens to your podcast, but really anybody that has an interest in this whole idea of working across business boundaries, across geographic boundaries, across the public-private, interface, building those muscles is going to be extremely critical when we really continue to tackle the big problems out there, because it takes those same capabilities and skills. I just, like I said, I'm appreciative of the fact that we have a chance to have this discussion. It's always nice to have it outside of the context of my daily work, and look forward to staying engaged.
We will. Thank you very much for your time and to be my guest here in the podcast.
Sure. Thank you, Peter.
Well, so far for this conversation with Snehal Desai, I hope you found it as fascinating as I found it to hear the experience with and in collaboration from Sneh in the different roles he had over all those years. I hope you liked the episode of the Collaborative Business Podcast, and as mentioned in the introduction, you can find the show notes at simoons.com/episode7. And if you want to learn more about creating successful alliances and partnerships, then check out the Alliance Mastery Academy at alliancemastery.com. The Alliance Mastery Academy is the place to learn about alliances and partnerships, where you can also collaborate with your peers, and you will find a library of relevant papers. So check it out at alliancemastery.com. That's it for this episode. Bye for now. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Collaborative Business Podcast. For more insights about business collaboration, partnerships, and alliances, hop over to www.cmoons.com.